the EFL. It's the Independent Football League podcast. Every week we convene to discuss all things Football League related. Today, goals, absolute bucket loads of them. Everywhere you look this past weekend, there were goals. We'll talk Tyson Fury potentially buying Morecambe, discuss Derby with a Rams writer. There's our scouting report and more. This is What the EFL. Welcome in then, listener, if you are discovering us for the first time. Hello, if you've been with us from the start, thank you very much. I'm Matt Davis-Adams. I'm joined every week by two of my pals to talk through everything that's happened in the EFL. Sam Parkins here. How are you doing, Sam?
I'm all right, Matt. How are you doing?
All right, thanks. Yeah, also back with us today, back from his holiday, is Adrian Clark from the six-star luxury of Dubai. Back to the what? Five-star rated What the EFL podcast, should we say?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll tell you, it was a great holiday, first and foremost. I really enjoyed it, and I've come back nicely refreshed and recharged. But what I've loved about this so far, What the EFL, is the feedback, and we're getting some really nice feedback, aren't we, from listeners? So keep it coming because it makes us feel good, and please tell your friends. We just got to spread the word. We just want more and more people to listen in, don't we?
The only feedback I want is, did you see Steve Bruce or any sacked manager on the Sun Lounger?
I kept a lookout. I did keep a lookout. No, it was a kind of a footballer-free zone, unbelievably. I saw the comedian Russell Howard. And
that'll
his
work.
Young family.
That'll work for
yeah.
me.
Yeah, I saw him. And I think over breakfast, I caught him working through some gags with what I think might have been his mate or writer, but he brought his family over. But yeah, I wasn't busy. I didn't go over and chat to him. I wasn't one of those knobheads. There were one or two, though.
Dubai, the playground of the rich and the famous, and Adrian Clark as well.
I'm not very rich after a week there, that is for sure.
£10 a pint, crikey Moses. Help us out, therefore. Clarky's got a big holiday bill to pay. If you want to sponsor the show, email whattheefl@yahoo.com. Give us a follow on Twitter @EFLWhatThe. And if you could tell a friend or rate, share, subscribe, all those things that you can do on podcast platforms, that's very helpful for us as well. Okay, that's the plugs done. Let's kick off with some news. Actually, not too much news this week. Normally, we're talking about five or six managers who've been fired. Cardiff, Hull, Middlesbrough, West Brom, all still looking for new gaffers at the time of recording. But Exeter have made an appointment. It's Gary Caldwell, former Wigan and Celtic defender, ex-Wigan manager, first job in solo charge since Partick Thistle in 2019. He has been under 21 coach at Newcastle and assistant at Hibs since then. Sammy used to kick lumps out of you.
I played against him and his brother once in the Youth Cup. Oh, and it wasn't nice at all. Really wasn't good. I mean, uber professional, I would say those two. You know, I think they took that into their pro career as well. Kind of organisers, very, very serious, the pair of them. I think Stephen Caldwell's a summariser now on MLS and very good at that. He is too. But Gary Caldwell, yeah, had a few opportunities in management. I remember watching his Wigan side when I was quite fresh out of the game. I think they romped to the League One title, and he had a really good side. So that was kind of almost the peak of his managerial powers, considering what's come subsequently. But fair play to him. Must have interviewed well. Good to see someone who's lost a couple of jobs, obviously had to take a slightly different direction in the last few seasons and been given another chance. But a little bit left field, because I'm sure that was a very attractive job for managers that are out of work. I know the people, obviously, at Exeter, they've not made a hasty decision. So good luck to him. It's a great job.
Must have interviewed well was exactly what I thought, Clarkie, because it is a risk, isn't it? Mentioned how long it's been since he'd had a solo gig of his own. I'm guessing he's not massively up to speed with League One, but everybody keeps abreast of everything these days, don't they? So to give him a fair crack of the whip.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I'd echo Sam's thoughts. I think it took me by surprise because he's not of late had good times in the technical areas. You know, he wasn't a success up in Scotland, and he's had a lot of jobs, hasn't he, for a 40-year-old. I just think that is mildly alarming, I guess, if you're an Exeter City fan. But this is a very stable club, of course. They're not in the business of sacking managers willy-nilly. So you'd expect him to be given a fair crack of the whip there. And yeah, I wish him well. But looking at some of the people they might have been interested in getting in, you know, he would have been a little bit further down my list, Caldwell. But yeah, it's a decent job, that's for sure.
Tough game for him to kick off with. Tuesday night, they go to Derby. Best of luck with that. Elsewhere, Tyson Fury might buy Morecambe. He told TalkSport last week, "I've been offered to buy Morecambe. I own the training facilities in the gym, so who knows? I was thinking I invest X amount of millions in them, basically throw it at them and keep going up." I mean, he's a bit of a blowhard, Clarkie, isn't he, Tyson Fury? I'm minded to not give this that much attention, but maybe also hoping that it's not going to gain that much traction. It doesn't seem like a great idea to me.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the cash, hasn't he? He could afford to blow a couple of million on Morecambe, and I'm sure they'd be very, very grateful for it, wouldn't they? If he's serious about it, and I don't suspect he is for a moment because, like you say, he comes out of a lot of hot air. But if he is serious, then what he could do is use his money to go out and get the club a real top CEO, get the club a top head of recruitment, get the club an excellent coaching staff and sort of build, you know, use the funds to build the club properly rather than just handing over a big check and saying, do with it what you will, because yeah, I'm sure that is doomed to end in failure. So look, yeah, that kind of money for a club like Morecambe would be very, very welcome, but it just needs to be used. It needs to be in the hands of someone that knows what they're doing. And, you know, Tyson knows what he's doing in the ring. He doesn't know what he's doing when it comes to football.
I didn't think anything could top Willie Carson being my chairman. But this would be, the perks would be amazing for the players, wouldn't it? This would be exceptional. And
not so good when you're going for your contract negotiations, I suppose, if you're looking for a pay rise.
And if he's serious, well, in terms of guests, let's get him on the fit and proper persons test.
That'd be amazing.
Listen, he passed with flying colours in terms of capital, but we could fail him on the business plan. That's for sure. The way he was talking the other day. My only other thought on this is there's got to be a role for Chris Eubank. I mean, that guy's wasted me. In reality, he's got to be front of house, hasn't he? You know, in his get up, he's wasted on reality shows.
Yeah. We'll have to wait and see what happens with that one. Wonder if he might struggle with the fit and proper owners test, given some of the pretty disgraceful things that he said about various minority groups throughout the years. But we'll see if anything comes of that. Tyson Fury may be buying Morecambe, but with the emphasis on maybe. And that was an abridged news. Next today, we'll look back on the best of the weekend's action. Just wanted a quick word on the two derbies that took place in the Championship on Sunday. Fairly emphatic home wins in both of them. Watford beating Luton 4-0. Adrian, that should buy Slaven Bilic some time. But also, I'm thinking there can't be a manager in the entire EFL who'd take a defeat like this more to heart than Nathan Jones.
Absolutely. Yeah, he would have been... Yeah, really, really low after this. But there was, you know, he came out and said that the squad was decimated by a sickness bug. It's just unlucky, isn't it? It's unfortunate timing. And I think it probably is a legitimate excuse in the circumstances. If a number of your players aren't feeling well, there's usually only one end result, isn't there? What I would say is that Watford set the standards here. This is the bar for them. This is what they should be producing week in, week out in terms of effort, application. The pressing was fantastic inside the opposition half. They've got excellent forward players, Keenan Davis. Well, what a goal. Was that a scorpion? Can we call that a scorpion? I think we can, can't we? I'm getting
just
nods
about,
of approval.
Yeah,
getting nods of approval from the boys. But yeah, it was, yeah, well, Keenan Davis is at it. Joao Pedro, when he's in the mood. Same with Ismail Assar. They've got the potential to be a promotion team. It's just, yeah, can they do this every week rather than just in the match where their fans demand victory?
Elsewhere, Swansea rewrote the South Wales Derby record books. They beat 10-man Cardiff 2-0. It's the first time they've won three successive meetings against their big rivals since 1912, when they first played. Ollie Cooper and Michael Obafemi got the win. But Sam, if you're one of Callum Robinson's teammates, just how many daggers are you shooting him when you go back at halftime with him having been sent off for something quite ridiculous 7 minutes into the game?
I don't think I'd have been that annoyed, to be honest. It's a derby. Frustrated that you've had to play for so long with 10, but I'd have been annoyed with Cabango if I was the centre forward. And he bumped into me, I'd have been annoyed and I probably would have reacted, but he's just overstepped the mark. But I still found it, quite soft. It's not going to injure the player, is it? And he's not thrown it with much velocity, if that's the right terminology. So it is a red, but I don't think it's as ridiculous as everyone's saying. It's just a human reaction, isn't it, to someone being a bit of a nuisance. I've done similar in the past. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it wasn't great. And from then on in, there's only one winner. We probably said it previously. I don't know if it adds up when you probably look at the statistics, but you don't want to go down to 10 against Swansea for that length of time. I think Matt Grimes, I saw the stat, I haven't written it down. I think he had more passes than the entire Cardiff team or something along those lines.
Sensational.
Grimesy is, said it so often, and I won't go over old ground here, but should be playing in the Premier League, I think, with his technical ability and his personality, his mentality, incredibly strong-willed. Maybe it's the mobility that people question. Done a lot of whys there, haven't I? I think maybe getting around the pitch is maybe why someone hasn't taken the punt on him, because he is technically superb. What a pass for the second. No, Obafemi could have had a hat trick, couldn't he? So comfortable victory, and Callum Robinson's had a big impact there, so they'll miss him.
Yeah, I thought Obafemi's movement was different class in the game. It was a nice finish as well for the goal. I know he missed a few, but there's a really good striker there in Obafemi, I think. I do like the runs that he makes, and obviously he's got good ammunition from Grimes, but also Cooper. I think Ollie Cooper deserves a bit of credit. We haven't sort of talked him up too much, but this is a guy that was at Newport last season on loan, did brilliantly for them, and he's made that step up to the Championship. He's made it look easy, and I mean, that was a proper stanchion finish, wasn't it? If the old stanchions were still there, those little circular things attached to the corner of the crossbar and the post, it might have got lodged in there. Class from him and class from Swansea. Not so good from Cardiff. You need a manager, don't they? I mean, what are they waiting for?
Yeah, there's a few clubs in that position. It was always my dream, by the way, to score a goal getting the ball stuck in that bit of the stanchion. Yeah. Hasn't happened yet, but you never know.
Don't make them anymore. Why is every goal net? Does this annoy you, Sam, or not? Why is every goal net a generic continental posts at the back,
box,
you know,
net,
tie,
yeah,
square? Yeah, why? I used to love grounds that had different goal nets, didn't you?
What's your favourite goal?
The old favorite ones goal at the Dell, where it was,
yeah,
really,
that was
really
the
tight,
first thing just, that I,
yeah,
thought of.
Spring straight, yeah, back out again.
I'll tell you where the ball got stuck in the stanchion twice in one game, at Molineux.
Yeah.
It was Wolves against Crystal Palace. I think Chris Armstrong could have been one. Was it Patterson, the midfielder? Mm. Could have got that wrong. But the two in one game. Yeah. Astonishing.
I like the stanchions, and I like it when they're, I quite like a coloured net. I think City Ground had some coloured nets, didn't they, back in the day? And if it's a heavy net, where the ball, when it hits the net, it just sort of stays in there and sort of just pushes it. I like a heavy net in. Favourite goal? I used to like the Wembley ones. I did. They were
post,
unique.
It felt like there was thicker posts there for some reason.
Yeah, they were just a thing of beauty. And yeah, these generic box nets, not for me. Rubbish.
If Abby was still producing this show, that would all get cut. But seeing as I am, it's got a good chance of making it in. Let's move on, though, to Sunderland 2, Burnley 4 at the Stadium of Light. Sunderland were 2-0 up here, Adrian. So it's a bit of a change of pace for Burnley to be the ones making the comeback rather than throwing the lead away.
Definitely. Look, first up, Burnley were shocking. Really, really bad. at the start of this game. Defensively, all over the place. I think Vitinho, the left back, for the goal that Diallo scores, which was a really nice disguised finish. I mean, just absolutely horrendous positioning from him. And in general, they were asleep in that first half. Everything, I think Vincent Kompany said afterwards, I hated everything about the first half performance. And Sunderland must have been cock-a-hoop because, you know, they've got Jack Clarke down the middle as a striker. You know, they're that light of firepower at the moment. You've got Luke O'Neill playing centre-back in a pair. That's not ideal. And they found themselves 2-0 up against Burnley. But to his credit, Vincent Kompany made some good changes, didn't he? I think he made some excellent substitutions. I think when he brought on Benson, he put him on onto the right wing, and he moved Teller from the right down into the middle, and it just changed everything. And yeah, they were excellent in the second half. Saw some great goals, didn't we, from them? Zaruri scoring a lovely curler into the top corner, and Benson just ripped Sirkin apart down the right. I do think for Kompany, bringing in players from Belgium that we don't really know and Burnley fans don't really know, it is important that those guys do the business. It's good for his reputation, and it's good for the dressing room as well, because they wouldn't have known these players particularly. And yeah, Zaruri and Benson have come alive in flashes. Yeah, Burnley, we haven't talked a lot about them on this pod, but they are they're clearly a very, very good team. No one scored more goals from open play than them. They've got the best XG against from open play, so they're not giving up that many chances. And as you look at the stats, they're a great possession team and a great pressing team. They tick a lot of boxes, Burnley. They're just a little bit green because they've got a lot of young players, a lot of players that are new to English football. They can cut out these sort of silly mistakes. I think they're a decent team. And in a campaign that doesn't have an obvious winner of the championship, Burnley, I think, are looking pretty good.
Yeah, they've only lost once all season. That was back in August. They are a point off the top two, albeit with a game in hand on Blackburn, who are second.
Yeah, and there was one quote from Vincent Kompany that I liked. And this is because I think we all was a little bit dismissive of the appointment because it's like, oh, he's only got the gig because he's called Vincent Kompany. But I like this from me because I keep telling the players, this is Burnley. You're not in London. You're not in Madrid. You're not somewhere fancy. You're in Burnley. The only way to get respect from the people that come and watch you is to work hard. You've got to grind things out. And if you do that, if you lose, they'll forgive you. And I think to get that grasp of what it means to be a Burnley player and Burnley manager, I think is good. So yeah, Vincent Kompany, big tick from me.
Very Deitchian of him. Sunderland, though, 3 defeats in 4, only 1 win in 7. They've got those problems up front, but that new manager bounce has gone very flat. 4-2 was also the score in the game at Bloomfield Roads between Blackpool and Preston. This time it went in favour of the home team. Blackpool collecting the points and the bragging rights. Gerry Oates opening the scoring here. Sam, 6-4 for him. I see in this morning's newspapers, Brentford, Bournemouth and Rangers are all interested in him. He's in fantastic form just now.
Blimey, that's a turnaround, isn't it?
Yeah.
Couldn't buy a goal a few weeks ago. He's probably getting a bit of criticism as well from the people that watch him week in, week out. Although I've always been a big fan, obviously, after his spell at the County Ground when he was kind of the assist king, wasn't he, for Owen Doyle during that amazing season and the purple patch that they had as a duo. So, yeah, brilliant work ethic, got good quality, scorer of great goals, I would say. So maybe he started getting a few more in the 6-yard box, headers and such like. He could definitely move to a club with bigger aspirations, maybe bigger budgets, and earn himself a nice whack as well at the same time. So keep an eye on that. I just think they're quite good fun, Blackpool. When I've seen them in the flesh, they've got some really good attacking players. The goal scorers, I think, encapsulate that. Patino getting a goal at the weekend, CJ Hamilton as well. And I thought quite interestingly, this game hinged on an injury to a centre-half. Around about the hour mark, Cunningham going off for Preston. It meant a reshuffle. Diaby came on in the middle of a back three. Liam Lindsay going to the left. And it just destabled Preston after they controlled the game. And I thought the collective of Preston was pretty strong. They had good control. But Blackpool's individual ability won out in the end, and that change just disrupted them. He's coming for a bit of stick, Diaby, because he was at fault for two of the goals, and Ryan Lowe's called for calm a little bit, you know, and not wanted to put too much blame on his shoulders, which is the right thing to do as a manager. But yeah, a really good victory from Blackpool, after Preston have had a brilliant start to the season on the road. Four wins in five they'd had previously. Four wins, yeah, away from home. So this was a tough game for Blackpool. But the last 25 minutes, with the impact from Hamilton and the aforementioned Yates, it was a brilliant win.
In summary, would you say that Blackpool have probably got enough to stay up and Preston probably not quite enough to threaten the playoff places?
Yeah, I would say so. And this is Blackpool, who are fielding a team with one or two niggles right now and players missing. So they're not full strength. And I think you kind of surmise Preston's position in the league, their woes in front of goal, a little bit by the lineup, you know, just one striker. He played Woodburn off the central striker or McCann. So they haven't got a plethora of options going forward. They haven't got a bundle of forward players that are in great form. And I think that's shown throughout the season. So they're a little bit short, and it's just a head scratcher why this Ryan Lowe team, I mean, they were pretty good value at the weekend. I know a Preston fan who was quite positive in defeat, but it's just a head scratcher having seen Ryan Lowe create such good sides previously going forward, that this team is clearly built on a normally a solid foundation rather than being free flowing going the other way.
Into League One, more goals. Just the five, mind you, as near neighbours Accrington and Bolton squared off at the Wham Stadium. Incredible comeback from Bolton here, Clarkie. They were 2-0 down.
They were. Look, I talked up Vincent Kompany, seeing the game, seeing a picture of the game and being able to influence it with a decision from the technical area. And that's what Ian Everett did here in the game. He made a triple change on 53 minutes at 2-0 down. He changed the system, went from a back three to 4-3-3. And I think the key was moving Dapo Afolayan from an unfamiliar wing-back role to be a sort of left-sided forward. And he ran him up, propped up nicely by Jack Iredale, who'd come off the bench. And yeah, there were some great goals, a lot of momentum about Bolton in the second half. And yeah, I think it was a terrific performance from them. I think the special mention to Kachunga as well, who came off the bench and sort of just gave the team a lot more energy and drive. And yeah, I think that Bolton deserved the win, basically, on the balance of the game. They'd gone three games as well without a goal, so it was important that they did score those second half goals. They've actually got the best defensive record in the league, Bolton Wanderers, another team we haven't really talked that much about this season, only letting 10 in 14. It's been at the top end of the pitch where they've struggled. So I think the fans will have been buzzing at this. And I've got to say, I love the limbs in the away end, the winning goal. I mean, in the Premier League, you so often get just fans on their feet clapping a goal, don't you? But to see a terrace full of fans going absolutely bananas was brilliant. And the other side note here, I've got to mention this. So Dion Charles obviously made his return to Stanley in a Bolton shirt. He'd gone on record as to say that the fee that they got for him had helped to buy the new changing rooms in the corner of the stadium.
I'd have bought them.
So I think the players at Accrington took a little bit of an exception to it. So when Bolton Wanderers pulled up on the away dressing room door, pinned up on the door was "Welcome to the Colby Bishop dressing rooms." I just thought it was an absolute genius bit of banter from the Accrington players, who clearly said it wasn't your money, mate. It was Colby. So yeah, that'll teach him for being a little bit big time.
Love that. Bolton's first league win at Accrington since 1891. They're up into the playoff place.
They've played twice there.
Yeah, I love those stats. It's great, isn't it? Yeah, you can bend them into any way you like, but yeah, they'll take it either way. 3 points, the main thing. What was that we were saying, Sam, about Peterborough's away struggles last week? Probably what motivated them to go to the Kassam Stadium and leave with 3 points. Not good for Oxford, though. That revival we discussed with Robin Cowan, pretty short-lived. Sort of refreshing the Oxford Twitter page this Monday morning, Sam. I'm fearful for Carl Robinson's position. Are you?
Yeah, I am. But I got like loads of admiration for him, and I felt he should have gone last summer. I felt he'd, you know, he'd come so close so many times. Stock was still really high. I think I'd have taken him at QPR. Honestly, I wouldn't now. That hero staying, but yeah, I'm a big. I really like Kyle. Wears his heart on his sleeve. I'm just going to read you three stats, which I've nicked from somewhere. I've not had an opportunity to check them, so sorry, Kyle. 7 wins in 26. 3 clean sheets in the last 30, 4 home wins in 15. I hope I haven't done him a disservice there, but those numbers are not good. That said, after the red card, it kind of galvanised them. Matty Taylor sent off at the weekend, and they played really well in the second half. Peterborough were woeful against 10. They had a really good first half. They scored from their only two shots on target, Peterborough, to go 2-0 ahead. And I thought it was interesting that he played Ephraim Mason-Clark. That's his first start of the season. He assisted the two Peterborough goals. But in essence, it wasn't a brilliant Peterborough performance, but a good response. And yeah, Grant McCann putting my quotes up on the dressing room wall. No problem at all if that's the motivation to get the win. But on an Oxford perspective, it's difficult to work out. I think they're having plenty of shots, third for shots per game, but other statistics, they're 22nd for big chances created, 14th for expected goals for. I don't think the level of chance is particularly good. That's what I'm kind of gauging from that. Matty Taylor doesn't look the same player right now that he has been previously. This is as bad as Brannigan's been. That's alarming because he's carried them to a degree. And I thought I'd finish with something to bring it all together, really. 14 goals in 13 matches. 5 set-piece goals, 2 penalties, only 7 goals in open play. For Oxford, in my mind, still one of the best attacking forces in the third tier, have been for a number of years. They're miles off that at the moment.
Needs a result soon, only 2 points above the relegation zone. Back-to-back away games against Pompey and Bolton next. They have appealed that red card shown to Matty Taylor, by the way.
He should have left, by the way. Sam's bang on. He should have left in the summer. I think, yeah, that was the time to go. He showed a little bit too much loyalty there.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with that. As we say, managers, when you're hot, you're hot, and that's when you've got to make the move. Otherwise, you can get in a sticky situation. Let's go into League Two, a meeting of two of the early season pace setters, Northampton, coming out on top against Stevenage. Clarkie, I'm guessing you picked this game to look at because Steve Evans got sent off and you'd like to revel in that a bit.
No, not at all. I mean, no surprise that it was only a matter of time before he got a red card. It didn't tickle me that he made a point afterwards of having a real say about Northampton singing and dancing in the changing room, about banging on the home dressing room door, etc. Because if there's one thing that I remember Steve Evans' teams doing, whether it was in October, because that's what he was saying, you don't shout in people's faces in October, it's too long to go. It's Steve Evans' team. They were always braggers. You know, they turned you over, they would be giving it large and they would be banging on your door as they walked past it on the way back in. And they would be singing and dancing, whether it was October or April. So
just on that, Clarkie, sorry to interrupt, but I heard a player, it will remain anonymous, and this is one for Football Cliche, say that the old adage goes, nothing's won in October the other day. That's not a quote, is it?
That's never been an old adage.
Surely August.
Never been an old adage. But getting to the game, Northampton are a great away team, aren't they? And they've bounced back from that disappointment of missing out on promotion really, really well, I've got to say. And yeah, I'm impressed with Brady's team. They sort of shut down a Stevenage team that had won 13 on the trot at home in all comps, who'd been having shots for fun, often from sort of direct play or set pieces and bits and pieces, but they were tormenting teams, and they only had 7 shots in this game. Northampton had double with 14. Special mentions, Sean McWilliams in midfield, really, really key player for them, got lots of drive and sort of purpose about him. He ended up having to do a job at wing back. And Mitch Pinnock was excellent in the match, and so was Louis Apare, the striker, you know, was a great platform for them. If you're going to win at Stevenage, you've got to fight them. You've got to battle it out, and you've got to sort of grow a pair because they will roll you over, Stevenage. And I'll give Northampton credit here. They went there with the attitude of, we'll roll up our sleeves and we're going to scrap it out with you. And we're going to annoy you just as much as you want to annoy us. And they came out on the right side of it. It was a crazy finish. Three goals right at the end. And yeah, Northampton came out on top. Both two strong teams. Not pretty, but strong.
Yeah, Northampton are third. They're 2 points behind Stevenage. Stevenage did have a 100% home record in the league before that game. Finally, from the weekend, an unexpected victory for managerless Crawley against Mansfield Town. Sam, Lewis Young is in interim charge of Crawley. Probably not sexy enough to get the job on a full-time basis, is he? But this is a feather in the cap in kind of Aaron Danks fashion this weekend.
Are you saying that not knowing that this is Ashley Young's brother?
Because oh, that jazzes it up a little bit. Right. Yeah, that does add a little something.
He went one in the other day as well, didn't he? Didn't he do a Cruyff turn as well against Chelsea or something of similar ilk? This is the second time we discussed Crawley today, Matt. This is fantastic, isn't it? The one EFL ground I haven't been to. Well, there's been a huge upturn. Three wins on the spin, if you include the Papa Johns. 10 goals scored. And he has changed it quite drastically. They were a back five and they're playing with a four. They're playing with two wide players who I think Tom Nichols and Ashley Naddison are enjoying. Nichols in particular, I think he likes having that supply line from wide. Fellows and Tilly it is. So yeah, Nichols with a goal and Naddison with his third and fourth for the season. So he has changed things. The possession's a little bit down, which is unsurprising, really, considering what they were trying to do start of the season. They were averaging just over 50%, 41% in this game. But caveat that with Mansfield, quite a possession side, a heavy possession team this season. But a really good win. Jack Powell, excellent. Dion Conroy was expected to be a big signing along with Dom Telford. He's starting to show his quality at the back as well. So giving himself a great opportunity to get the job. He's, I think, been there and done it at Crawley. Seems to have been around for absolutely ever. So we shall see. It'll be a bit of a curveball in if you consider where they were heading in the summer. But, you know, why not? The proof's in the pudding. The lads are performing for him. And this was an excellent result against Mansfield, who me and you know, Matt, clearly are going to go up this year. Listen to last week's pod, Clarky.
Crawley climbing to 21st, 3 points above the relegation zone. Mansfield's first league defeat since the 27th of August. All four of their league losses have come on the road. Okay, that was the weekend review. Next today, another EFL expert takes the fit and proper guest test. Taking the fit and proper guest test this week is Ryan Conway. You'll remember Ryan, probably, if you listen to the Totally Football League show. He was a regular guest for us there when he was at The Athletic writing about Derby County. Ryan, you're taking that to the extreme. You're going to write a whole book on the Rams. Tell us a bit more about it, please.
I was trying to figure out how further I could be a glutton for punishment and thought, why not write even more words about Derby County? It's called Pride Before the Fall, a story about how Derby went from the brink of the Premier League to the brink of extinction. And it's tracking pretty much everything from, you know, that May final against Aston Villa all the way up until sort of the start of this season, really. You know, we've managed to get about a quarter of the way there so far. And when you know, going back through it all and you think, bloody hell.
It has been a crazy couple of years, no doubt. I've got to say, I'm absolutely delighted to get you on the Monday after Derby lose their third division fixture and Nottingham Forest beat Liverpool in the actual Premier League. What a joy. We'll talk about what's happened over the last couple of years, but what about Friday night? Obviously, Ipswich have been brilliant so far in League One this season, so no disgrace in losing to them. But what did you make of Derby's performance?
It was a bit vanilla. I had some concerns when the lineup was announced, when it looked like, and then played out to be, Nathaniel Mendez-Lang and Tom Barkhuizen as the wing-backs in sort of this 3-5-2 system. Mendez-Lang and Barkhuizen are very good players, really clever players, but defensively, you just don't want him defending, you know, and you could see that in the game. You could see space, particularly on Barkhuizen's side, where Ipswich very cleverly identified early on that he doesn't want to be going back there. You know, he doesn't have the tools defensively. And that channel was exposed time and again. And Ipswich's goal it's a slap back pass from Curtis Davis, but the pressure that comes from that channel, from that flank, you know, Cashin is pulled out there and he's struggling with it, and Curtis Davis comes over to help and then struggles with it as well. It all comes from pressing that particular space, and then the back pass is loosened, and then it's a goal. But I think the real concern is I didn't really see Derby test the goalkeeper, and I think the system was set up to play mainly on the counter-attack with Mendes Lang as the speedy outlet, and then you had Dobbin and Sula up front, very quick players, but they never really stretched Ipswich. There was never really a moment where you thought Ipswich were in real trouble. Derby started first 5 minutes really hot, but then once Ipswich got a hold of the game, they looked pretty in control.
So what's the first impression then of Paul Warne among Rams fans then, Ryan? Because it was a big change, wasn't it, from what Liam Rossini was trying to build there stylistically. What have you made of him so far and his work tactically with the team?
I think it's a weird one, to be honest with you, mate, because obviously the Liam Rossini essentially built that squad for Liam Rossini's style of play, which was build out from the back, sort of patient possession build-up, and Paul Warne has come in and essentially he's tried to make them more direct, and that doesn't mean route one at all. I think what he's tried to do is get the ball to the wingers' strongest outlet, get them up the pitch quite quickly, and then put crosses into the box for guys like James Collins to attack. And also with playing with a bit more width and a bit more speed and directness means that Derby are actually a lot better in transition. And I think in transition and generally just sort of moving the ball quicker through the lines, getting up the pitch, they're the two areas where you can say Derby are definitely better under Warne than they are under Rossini. Under Rossini, it was quite docile at times, you know, it had the harbingers of Philip Cocu's team, all the worst harbingers as well as some of the decent ones, but at times it was just sort of, it was boring, to be honest, mate. At times they were boring and under Warne they at least, you know, they at least try and get some gusto going forward, but I think it's clear that the next transfer window and even the window after that there will be probably a lot more personnel turnover as well as Warne looks to mould this side in his own image. But they are definitely better in transition and definitely more direct down the wings.
Ryan, I know you'll have been listening every week to the new podcast, but just in case you haven't been, we do a thing called the Scouting Report. And when I think of Derby of the last few years, I think of about 27 youngsters that have made debuts, so much so that I get my Knights, my Birds, my Thompsons mixed up all the time. I don't even know who. Who is on track to make it big time still? Who's still prospering? Who's producing? Who's improving? If you could pick one.
I could pick one. It's Cashin. If I could pick one, yeah. Very, very impressive centre half. I remember watching him in the 2019-20 season for the Derby youth team during some of the UEFA Youth League games and also in some of their league games as well. He's an old school defender. You know, his black boots, shirt tucked in, just like absolutely no frills. Not really the prettiest with the ball at his feet, but does what you would class as, you know, classic defender stuff, you know, that you need in League One. Get, you know, throwing in blocks, getting really good tackles. He's really switched on. You know, he will, you know, if he gets sort of beat, he then knows sort of his secondary position to be in to make sure that then the mistake doesn't become an absolute disaster and can make the tackle, can make the block, can put the attacker off. And to say he's 20 years old, he plays well beyond his years. Makes some mistakes, and I think some of those are part of the system. The line is quite high and he hasn't got the best speed, and so then when they get him behind him, he has to turn and run back. Sometimes he can get beat, but yeah, he's really, really good, really impressive. And Derby, you know, they were lucky to keep hold of him when obviously all the personnel changes were happening, but they've got a real gem on their hands there if properly nurtured and having those rough edges smoothed off.
Which tabloid is going to be first to do a cash-in pun when Derby do eventually come to sell him? Well, maybe it'll be me on this podcast. We've kind of danced around Rossini going and obviously Wayne Rooney had left before that. Do you think that the managerial reset needed to happen, Ryan? And does that kind of fit with getting new owners as well? It always feels, doesn't it, when a new ownership comes in and they keep the old manager, that it's only ever a stay of execution. So now it's like the reset has happened properly and Derby can focus on the future.
Yeah, I think it was... It's a strange one because I was gutted for Liam when it was announced that he was being relieved of his duties. The start that they'd made, I think in all competitions, I think he'd won 7 out of 12. But the start that they'd made in the league was fine. You know, it wasn't great, but it wasn't a disaster. Some of the performances, particularly away from home, were a concern. I don't even think they'd scored away from home under Rossini. They were a concern. And the way that they, like the Plymouth game where they go in 2-1 up, 2-0 up at half-time and just completely surrender the lead. Things like that are pretty inexcusable. But it was okay. My feeling is to sort of, you can connect maybe a few dots here and think, you know, he was never given the permanent job. It was always an interim job. So maybe the feeling internally was sort of, you know, this is playoffs or bust. And not bust as in Derby go under, but sort of playoffs or this is a failed season. You know, maybe that was the internal feeling and the gap at the time when Rossini left, I think, was 8 points to the top two. And perhaps the feeling was, we can't allow that gap to get any wider. Paul Warne, if he was having some issues with Rotherham in terms of maybe the backing of Rotherham and things like that, maybe was had one eye on another chapter. And, you know, he's a specialist in the division, 3 promotions in 5 seasons. And maybe that's the... It was the sort of win-now move that you know, signalled that didn't really have time for Rossini to learn on the job. They wanted to go up this year, so yeah, I was gutted for Liam. He'd not made a bad start at all. But you know, I'd be being a bit of a jackass if I was going to sit here and argue that Paul Warne shouldn't get the job because he's got 3 promotions in 5 seasons, very successful manager. So you know, on that remit, you can make the case that it is an upgrade. Definitely, you know, he's got the experience, he's got the promotions. You can't argue with that.
Come on then, Ryan. Give us a percentage chance of Derby getting promoted this season, because you've seen a lot more of them in the flesh than we have. You've got the specialist manager. Have you got the team?
Yes and no. It's weird because now the team, if I was going to put it on a percentage chance of Derby going up, I'd say 60%.
Really? Okay.
I'd feel confident, and that confidence is bolstered by Warne, and I think by some of the recruitment, where there are some players in that team that may be too good for League One. Thinking more specifically, Conor Horahan. You know, McGoldrick is obviously now on the back nine of his career, but he's still an effective player. He's still a good player. He struggled with fitness at the early part of this season. I think a lot will hinge on how Warne tinkers with the personnel in sort of January, because no doubt there will be, you know, some incomings to fit his style and possibly some outgoings as well. Joe Wildsmith, actually the goalkeeper, has been really underrated. You know, as a signing, wasn't too overwhelmed when he came in, but he's come in, he's made some decent saves, got a few penalty saves under his belt. And yeah, I think with the manager, I think with the personnel, because individually they've got so much quality. For the division, Barkhazen's another one. Yeah, I'd go 60%.
All right, we'll hold you to that. Ryan, we appreciate your time today, but you know us well enough to know that we always finish with a super serious question. So you've had your warm-ups now. Here it is. You own some magnificent millinery yourself. I just wonder how you feel about the bobble hat that Paul Warne wears. It's a rather functional item of headwear, isn't it? Does that make it difficult for you to warm to him? And would you feel better if he just randomly came out in a fedora for one game?
Well, obviously, I watched his introductory interview and he said he was a big fan of hats, and immediately I moved the power rankings to put them at the top of all managers, including Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp. But yeah, it's you know, he's a practical man. I think maybe, you know, once summertime gets here, I would like him to see him maybe don a fedora or a big brim hat, something with a bit of colour and splash. So yeah, you know, next time at Pride Park, I'll probably do my first question to him is, you know, do you want to borrow a hat? And, you know, we can tag team and take this division down together. But I'm a fan of the bobble. I'm a fan of the bobble hat as a practical garment. But you know, it's nothing to write home about.
No, let's let him get through winter with the bobble hat and see where we are from then. Before we let you go, then, Ryan, remind us the name of the book, when it's out, and where people can keep up with you on Twitter.
Yes. So the name of the book is Pride Before the Fall: How Derby Went from a Game Within a Game of the Premier League to Within a Game of Extinction. It is out in the summer of 2023. Probably around August time, and you can keep up with me on Twitter at RJConway92.
It's well worth doing that. Adrian, Sam, has Ryan passed the fit and proper guest test?
Well, he had a tap in, didn't he, to say 95% Derby are going to get promoted and Forest are going to go down, and he didn't even go there. For that alone, top stuff, Ryan.
Yeah, for anyone that can crowbar in the word harbinger into a podcast, will pass the test, in my opinion. So well played.
Well done, Ryan. A great moment for your career, I'm sure. Thanks so much for speaking to us. We'll catch up with you again soon.
Joy to mix it up with you guys again. Really appreciate you having me on. Thanks so much, fellas. Take care.
Many thanks to Ryan Conway for joining us there. Next today, it's our scouting report. Clarkie, you continue to go after my heart by picking players with fabulous names. Finn Azaz very much comes into that category.
He does, doesn't he? What a good name. And what a good player. He's having an outstanding season for Plymouth Argyle, who are flying, of course. He suits their style of play quite brilliantly. Obviously, they're a 3-4-2-1, where they have two attacking midfielders. And because he's two-footed, because he's got good mobility, and he's a natural number 10, he can play in either of those positions. And he's made it his own at Argyle this season. What I like about him is the way that he sort of receives passes on the half turn in those little pockets and then turns, and he can play the killer pass, or he can play a centre player out wide, or he can dribble with the ball. He's technically a very, very tidy footballer, in my opinion, Finn Azaz. We saw that at Newport last season, where he made the team of the year and he won the EFL Young Player of the Season. So he's not a newcomer on the scene. He was brilliant in League Two for Newport, but it is quite a step up into League One, the top end of League One, and he's been outstanding. He's got six goals, he's got three assists, and I've looked back at them all this morning, and the thing that really stands out and why I think he's such a good player and a prospect is that all of his finishes are passes. He doesn't try and spank it. He passes the ball past goalkeepers with a real confidence in his own technique. He hits the ball cleanly but accurately. He's very, very precise, and yeah, I just think he's a quality footballer that certainly has potential to shine at Championship level. For him, the goal is to get into Aston Villa's first team, of course. That might be a stretch too far, I don't know, we'll have to wait and see, but he's headed in the right direction. You've got to remember, for those people listening that don't know too much about Finn Azaz, he didn't make it at West Brom. He came to the end of the academy and they got rid of him. And he was snapped up by Aston Villa, who loaned him straight away to Newport. And the rest is history. Prior to Newport, by the way, he'd been part of Cheltenham's promotion winning campaign. He hadn't scored that many goals, but he'd been part of a title winning season. So, yeah, this is a kid that is an EFL star. And I can see him in the Championship for sure next season doing the business.
Clarkie, would you say he's finishing with a degree of pizzazz?
Get out.
I admire that from you, Parkin. I'm having it.
Pizzazz, full of pizzazz. A more prosaic name for you, Sam. You've gone for Ben Whitfield. Barrow had a decent start to the season. It's not going so well of late, but he's standing out for them.
Nothing about Saturday night there for you, no?
You're not that close enough.
No. I think just because, you know, when you're getting ready for the Saturday night highlight show.
June Whitfield, that's who I'm thinking of. Do you remember her?
Yeah.
Old actress in loads of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. The amount of stats they get thrown at you when you're preparing, Clarkie's done the gig as well. It's you get the same names crop up, and I don't know anything about this lad. Well, I didn't know anything about this lad at the start of the season. Kept producing, kept assisting, kept talking about him. So I thought it would be amiss of us not to have a little bit of a deeper look. And he's having a brilliant season. I think first and foremost, if you were playing the old footballer game, who is this guy? I mean, he started at Guiseley, he went to Bournemouth, got a move there in 2014. He's been at Kidderminster, Port Vale, Torquay, Stockport, now at Barrow. I think unfortunate with injury, everything I've read last year at Stockport seemed to contribute to their success there. But yeah, 10 goal involvements already, 3 goals, 7 assists, can play a variety of positions, can play on either side of the pitch. From the highlights I've seen at his previous clubs, he looks to be a left-footed player, yet 3 goals in the league this year have come with his right side. So he looks incredibly two-footed. There's a theme here. I think everyone I've spoken about this season has been two-footed, but gives you that opportunity to be such a tricky customer for opponents, and also the flexibility for a manager to play you in different roles. So, few stats, second to Mitch Pinnock in chances created, He's had the most shots in the league outside the box, which I thought was quite interesting. Loves an attempt from distance. At Barrow, top for crosses, key passes, top for assists, obviously, and just having a real effect for them in an attacking sense. Dead balls as well, really creative from then. There's been a few goals as well this season that I've seen that he's been the kind of pre-assister, put it into the box and someone's got a contact on it and they've ended up getting themselves a goal. So at 26, I would say, given a steady run of games now, definitely someone who could potentially go on and play higher.
We'll see. Yeah, they might both be at a higher level next season. Finn Azaz and Ben Whitfield, the two subjects of this week's scouting report. Just about done for today then, but obviously we've got a tweet of the week to go through. Sam, what do you think of this? From Nathan Teller, one of the stars of Burnley's win at the weekend. He says, well, that was eventful. Hands over your eyes emoji. Great character from the boys to turn it around. Happy to score! Exclamation mark. Away support was incredible. On to Tuesday, claret heart emoji. Hashtag aerial threat. Two eyes looking emoji. It's all about the hashtag for me here. It's obviously something of an in-joke, but I don't think I've ever seen aerial threat as a hashtag before, so I respect that.
It's a great start and it's a great end. Mm. The middle, he's followed suit, hasn't he, with too many who have fallen at my sword before. I like the claret emoji as well. So full marks for that. But it's a steady 5 out of 10, isn't it? Just purely for the hashtag and the nice beginning.
All right, Clarkie, he tends to stick to a fairly similar path with all of his tweets. It's two pictures of him. Okay. And yeah, the claret emoji, you know, previously we've had great win and great performance from the boys, exclamation mark. Happy to score, exclamation mark. Thanks for the continued support, praise emoji. It's all pretty standard stuff. Yeah. But if you're happy at the start of your career.
Happy to score is a yellow straight
yeah,
off the bat.
Yeah,
close
well, you're
to
not going
to
be unhappy to score, are you?
It's up there with always an honour to get picked for my country is another one that
you're going
to
be absolutely buzzing that you've scored. And you're going to be running to the bar to get the first round in. Let's be honest. Let's see a bit more of that.
I've got a lot of time for the hashtag aerial threat with the eyes emoji, though, because he's not a big lad, is he? He's not a big lad, and he scored a header, so he's just putting it out there. Hang on, I've got a little bit in my locker there. He's sort of taking the mickey out of himself because he knows he's not really an aerial threat. So, maybe he's improving. Maybe this is going to be the catalyst for better tweets ahead. I hope so.
Look, if you think that we're improving, tell a friend about us. We'd like to get plenty of people who love the EFL joining us on a weekly basis. If you use a podcast platform like iTunes that lets you rate and review, then a 5-star review and some nice words would be very kind of you and much appreciated too. If you want to sponsor the pod, it is whattheefl@yahoo.com, and we're on Twitter @EFLwhatthe. Thanks to Sam and Adrian for being with us today. Many thanks to Ryan as well for his company earlier, talking all things Derby County. We'll be back with another show next week. Until then, though, it's goodbye.